time when Hollywood comes to Dublin. We love movies with Gordon Hayden. Spin 103.8.
Now on We Love Movies, we are going to preview tonight's Oscars with our film critic Rory Cashin. Rory, there is some interesting Irish nominees in there. Of course, we've got Ruth Negga. We've got the costume designer Consolata Boyle in there too. And we also have Art Parkinson, who is one of the main voice actors in Kubo and the Two Strings. And I suppose we'll also attach a little bit of Irishness to the screenplay for The Lobster, because Element Pictures are behind that movie too. So there's enough there to be shouting about. Before we get into all of that, let's just talk about Best Picture. Is it a foregone conclusion at this stage, Rory, that La La Land is going to walk away with the top prize?
I would have thought so, except that there seems to be a bit of a an underdog vibe for, of all things, Hidden Figures.
Right.
Because okay. It did so well in the American box office. I know La La Land is technically like the big box office hit of all the best Oscar nominees around the world, but Hidden Figures has done so fantastically well in America. Plus, I think they're going to want to, I don't want to say give like a token award to an African American film, but this one seems a bit more populist and a bit more accepted by the general public, obviously because of the amount of money that it made, compared to Moonlight and compared to Fences, because the two of those, as good as they both are,
yes,
relatively nobody went to see them. So I wouldn't be hugely surprised if Hidden Figures were to, you know, do a bit of a, I'll take that, thank you very much.
Okay, so maybe that could be the outsider that might just possibly topple La La Land, because La La Land has just been scooping up every award under the sun at the moment. Let's get into the acting categories now, Rory. Best Actress, our very own Ruth Negga is in there for Loving. She has had a great run and it received an awful lot of acclaim and attention for her role in Loving. But I just don't know, Rory, if she just has it to scoop this main prize, because Emma Stone in La La Land and Isabelle Huppert in Elle, I think they're going to give her a real run for her money. You've also got Natalie Portman for Jackie in there, along with Meryl Streep. But I have a feeling it could be between Emma Stone and Isabelle Huppert for this award.
I would agree. Like, obviously, it would be great if Ruth were to win it, even though I don't necessarily believe that she would deserve to win it. Like, she was very good, but it wasn't the best performance of the year we've seen by far. Isabelle Huppert probably did give the best performance, but because of the content of the film that she's starring in, that is so not... I was shocked she was nominated, first of all, because it's foreign language, and the Oscars paying attention to anything that's foreign language outside of Best Foreign Language Picture is like practically unheard of. And then on top of that, like what the film Elle is actually about is very, very not Oscar-y. So I would say it's pretty much Emma Stone's to take home.
Okay, and then moving on to the Best Actor side of things. I don't know in this particular category, because we've got Casey Affleck, Andrew Garfield, Ryan Gosling, Viggo Mortensen, Denzel Washington. If we were to look at this like a horse race, Rory, I feel that it's like Denzel and Casey Affleck. They're the ones who are pulling away from the pack, that it's really going to be a slugfest between these two. What do you think?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. You know, people are kind of, they've kind of already forgotten that Gosling has even been nominated, because it's not an award worthy performance. And then yeah, you've got Affleck, who is going through a bit of a personal turmoil issue at the moment. Like, there's a lot of stories coming up around him, and the Oscars probably won't want to attach themselves or want to be seen to be celebrating someone who's still kind of under scrutiny at the moment, so that could swing it in Denzel's direction in the end.
I think you could be right there, Rory. It's a head and a heart for me. Like, I do feel the heart says Casey Affleck, but the head says Denzel is going to get it. Now, moving on to Best Supporting Actress, we've got a great list of actresses in there. Michelle Williams, Octavia Spencer, Nicole Kidman, Naomi Harris. But really, in the end of the day, Rory, Viola Davis, she's in there too. Is it pretty much hers just to take away on the night?
Yeah, like, it's as kind of annoying as it is, as anyone who's seen Fences should know, that Viola Davis should be up for Best Actress. And it felt like the producers were maybe hedging their bets by putting her in Supporting Actress, just because they're like, the Best Actress one's probably pretty chock-a-block of Streeps already, so you may as well try and win one of them.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I don't think she definitely would have even had a shout in to win Best Actress if she was up for that. So she does seem almost the sure thing to win the supporting actress, even though she doesn't give a supporting role. She gives a leading role, which is must be irritating to the actual supporting actresses who are like, but I deserve this more than you.
Yeah. It's so true. Now, this next category, the Best Supporting Actor, I feel this one's a little bit more wide open. We've got Mahershala Ali for Moonlight, Jeff Bridges, Hell or High Water. We got Lucas Hedges, great performance in Manchester by the Sea, Dev Patel in Line, and Michael Shannon, Nocturnal Animals. So just in advance of the Oscars, Mahershala Ali won the SAG Award for Moonlight, and Dev Patel won the BAFTA for Line. And it kind of felt like there was a little bit of nepotism going with that BAFTA win.
Yeah.
Who do you think, Rory? It's going to be a tough one, I reckon, this.
Yeah, like this one's the bonkers one, because the guy who won the Golden Globe isn't even nominated for the Oscar, but his co-star is. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Michael Shannon win it, because Nocturnal Animals has been pretty much completely closed out of every other major category anyway. So they might be like, let's give this something. But on the other hand, like Mahershala Ali, he was fantastic in Moonlight. And again, he did give a proper supporting role where he wasn't in it much, but he was very, very memorable, and it's kind of like a massive career launching pad for him, because he was in this and he was in Hidden Figures. So it's been a really strong year for him, so I can imagine him taking it away.
Yeah, I'd agree with you too. And finally, Rory, we're going to take a look at the Best Director category. We have your man in there, Denis Villeneuve, with Arrival, Hacksaw Ridge, Mel Gibson, him making a welcome return to Hollywood. We've got Damien Chazelle for La La Land, Manchester by the Sea's Kenneth Lonergan, and Moonlight for Barry Jenkins. Again, like the Best Picture category, you know, is this one Damien Chazelle's?
It's difficult this one now, because every one of them could technically, like, the thing about the Best Director awards is this is usually the one they give to the film when they're kind of apologizing for not giving it Best Picture.
Yeah.
Like when they gave it to Ang Lee for Brokeback, but they get Picture to Crash. You know, they're like trying to cover all their bases. So I'd say if La La Land walks away with Best Film, they won't give Director to Chazelle. They'd probably give it to Manchester by the Sea director, or they'd probably give it to the Moonlight director, just to be fair, even though it shouldn't be fair. It should be to whomever deserves it. And if that is the case, then it probably should go to Chazelle, because he did give a more technically impressive directorial output.
Okay, so you're going to put your stake, your claim on him. I think it's going to go to him. I just think it's going to be La La Land's On the Night, similar for a few years ago. Remember The Artist? I think it's going to nearly be a copycat sort of scenario where that scooped so many awards on the night. Rory Cashin, thank you so much for that. Rory will be back a little later on, as he'll be reviewing some of this weekend's new cinema releases, such as Patriots Day, which is based on the 2013 Boston bombings. But for now, Rory Cashin, thanks a million.
Thank you.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now, the great Martin Scorsese, he's over in Dublin this weekend. He's a busy man. He's giving a masterclass, and he was also at Trinity College as well to accept an award. But to go through the man's career to date is Andy McCarroll. Andy, before we get into your top five Martin Scorsese movies, just talk to us a little bit about the man before we get into the movies. Is it true he initially wanted to be a priest?
It is. It's kind of strange when you see his films. He's this, you know, the kind of the godfather of violence, and, you know, these unbelievably narcissistic characters. And he actually did train to be a priest initially. He's very much, and you know, you can even see it in his films, the kind of Catholic guilt and the Catholic symbolism pretty much plays a part in all of his movies. So it is kind of strange to see somebody who, you know, is responsible for, you know, vicious scenes like people getting buried alive in the desert actually wanted to be a priest when he grew up.
And even outside of all of that, you know, the strong Catholic man that he is, was he married five times?
He was, and when you kind of see him in person, he's this kind of diminutive, soft-spoken. He doesn't seem like the kind of person who would have, like, you know, a string of affairs and a string of wives. And even probably for me, more surprising, one of his wives was actually Isabella Rossellini, who was just, you know, one of the most beautiful women in the world. And, you know, anyone who's seen Friends knows she was good enough to make Ross Geller's list.
Now, even outside of him as a talented filmmaker, he was also a lecturer. And some very famous filmmakers studied under him.
He did. He used to teach at New York University. And of his students that came through, he had Oliver Stone, of course, who directed JFK. Spike Lee, of course, another very famous filmmaker. So that class was kind of, you know, the one to be in. It's, as alumni go, it's something, you know, pretty special.
And also just an interesting little bit of trivia. He did at one stage make a music video for a very famous artist.
He did. And again, this is, he's just full of contradictions, as Mr. Scorsese. He directed the Michael Jackson Bad music video, the one that gave Wesley Snipes his debut. The full-length video actually runs for about 16 minutes, and it kind of flickers between black and white and colour. I've watched the full version. It's absolutely insane. When you see the music video as is, like the kind of the famous, you know, the dance-off in the car park, when you see the full version of it, like, it takes a bit of a turn. There's like a knife fight in it at one point. It's insane. I recommend going to YouTube and checking it out.
And just looking ahead now to films that he has in the pipeline, Andy, there's one of which that Robert De Niro has been hoping to get made for a long time, about a mafia hitman. And Netflix look like they're going to stump the cash up for it.
It is. It's, Netflix have been kind of slowly building up, but like the TV shows, the likes of Stranger Things and Narcos and House of Cards, they're kind of their bread and butter. There's longevity in things like that. The only film ones they've done so far are kind of the Adam Sandler ones, which haven't really been a big success for them, even though the viewing figures on them have actually been quite high. But just to get Martin Scorsese to, you know, exclusively make a film for Netflix, that's a huge grab. I know they're talking like a small cinema run just to make it in contention for Oscars. You know, being a Martin Scorsese mob film, obviously he's going to be involved in Oscar season. Mm. But the film itself is about a mob hitman and his involvement in the possible killing of Jimmy Hoffa, the famous, you know, Teamster union boss who went missing. And the cast he has for this, he's got Robert De Niro, Harvey Keitel. There's even talk of Joe Pesci being coaxed out of retirement to star in this film. And if they get that, that's just going to be, again, another game changer for a man who seems to be constantly reinventing different genres and the way films are made, like everything from, you know, the Steadicam shot in Goodfellas to, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street. He's someone who always seems to be one step ahead, even like he's 75 years of age now and he's embracing the new wave of technology that, you know, other filmmakers, even filmmakers younger than him, don't seem to be doing.
Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, there's also talk as well, and he just took back on the casting front with The Irishman, is Al Pacino. Like, if he gets him, like, that would be incredible. I don't know, it would be great to get Leonardo DiCaprio in there. He could have the full mantle in there. But Andy, I want to get your top five Martin Scorsese films, which I know I'm going to put you on the spot. This is a difficult thing to try and narrow down this man's work. So I appreciate you taking on this challenge. So in at number five for you, Andy.
For me, it's Taxi Driver. Now, I know that's, a lot of people think that should be higher on the list. That's just kind of a personal opinion from mine. I was quite kind of late to seeing Taxi Driver. I'd already seen a lot of the other films on the list before I came to that. And I think it is a film very much of its time, and especially, you know, the iconic look, the you talking to me thing. That was very much in my consciousness beforehand. I'd seen it parodied in, you know, things like The Simpsons and every kind of TV show in the 90s. So for me, coming, I didn't come into that fresh, but even then, it's still just an absolutely stunning piece of cinema. And you can even see the, you know, the negative effects it had of people. There was, you know, the famous case of John Hinckley trying to assassinate President Reagan as a way to try and impress Jodie Foster. Like, it was, there was just something really affecting about that film. You know, the mohawk, the look, everything about it is just iconic. And to have that as, like, you know, your second film, your second, sorry, major film to come out after Mean Streets, it shows a filmmaker who's really confident, really hitting his stride. He didn't take safe options. He didn't take, you know, he took a really big risk on this one. Mm. And for me, that just stands out. It's something that's, you know, it's, what was it, 1976 that came out, and it's still something that's, you know, very much, even if you haven't seen the film, you're very much aware of that.
You talking to me? Talking to me? Well, who the hell else are you talking to? Talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
Now, moving on to number four, Andy, you've got Raging Bull. Why?
I'm a huge boxing fan. I'm a huge sports fan in general, but that film just, the story of Jake LaMotta is absolutely unbelievable. Just this kind of vicious animal, like, inside of the ring, and just, he couldn't take that, he couldn't separate himself from, you know, the person he was in the ring to the person in real life. I know there's recently the case, the footballer in America who hit the girl on the lift, and there's that kind of, well, 90% of your life is in this kind of violent environment, and then when you try, you know, the 10% in real life, you can't separate from that. And I don't think there's any character in cinema or any character in real life who embody that as much as Jake LaMotta. And even just the film itself, it was just shot just after Rocky. and he wanted to differentiate itself so much. That's why it's in black and white. He didn't want, you know, the color, the blood, the kind of, you know, acted Hollywood version of boxing that was in Rocky. Like, if you watch the, like, I love the Rocky films, but if you watch the fights on those screens, like, they should have been stopped 10 times over.
Yeah.
But this one, it's just fantastic. The score of the film is absolutely perfect. De Niro's, you know, physical transformation, he's kind of, that was the standard bearer for, you know, people like Christian Bale, like, you know, the kind of award-baiting weight rise and weight loss. And that was the kind of, you know, the first major one to see him. I think it was 60 pounds he put on for the last few scenes, and then going from somebody who could have genuinely been a boxer to, you know, somebody who's just a mess of a human being by the end of it.
Yeah, he's not a nice person at all, is Jake LaMotta, and amazingly played by Robert De Niro, and well deserving of his Oscar as well. Now we move into your top three, Andy. Now I've got to be honest with you, Andy, out of your list, this is a controversial one for me, because I wasn't actually a fan of this movie, believe it or not. It's the story of Jordan Belfort, The Wolf of Wall Street.
It is, and for me, this is kind of Scorsese's biggest attempt at a comedy. I just think it's a fun film. It's not something that, you know, the likes of Goodfellas, Casino, or Taxi Driver, you're very much aware, like, you're watching a movie. Like, this is a movie maker at work. This is kind of like something a bit kind of off the cuff for him, and I thought it was something really different, and I really enjoyed Leonardo DiCaprio's performance in that as well. I didn't think he, you know, he kind of probably maybe deserved the Oscar for it. Not, you know, I'd be him and Han on that one. But for me, just that kind of seduction of the lifestyle, it's something he does really well, especially with the mobster films. You see, you know, the tables full of money, the tables full of drugs, and you just think to yourself, like, you could very much be, you know, enticed by that lifestyle. And then when you see it's a kind of, you know, it's a real life person, like Jordan Belfort's giving talks over in Ireland now, like, you know, every couple of months at this stage. And it's very easy to get suckered into that. And because it's kind of its time, for me, you're kind of, you know, you're seeing, you know, the effects the recession has on people over here. And you can see the likes of Jordan Belfort who are responsible for that. It's very easy to kind of humanize him in a way, even though he's such this kind of, you know, horrible person. But when you see the kind of, you know, the temptation of that lifestyle, you can kind of see, well, yeah, if that was kind of presented to me, I could see myself and turn into the dark side on that one.
I see you in a new light now, Andy.
I just love money and drugs, apparently.
What can I bring for you on this glorious afternoon?
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes, until one of us passes the fuck out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
I'm good with water for now, though. Thank you.
It's his first day on Wall Street. Give him time.
Now, at number two, Andy, this would be the film that finally got Martin Scorsese his Oscar, because he was nominated 8 times. But mind you, if we cast our mind back, when they were about to open up the envelope, who was there at the top of the podium but Francis Ford Coppola, Steven Spielberg, and George Lucas? They were to announce the winner, and it went to Martin Scorsese for The Departed. It felt like it was nearly like a lifetime achievement Oscar, as opposed to Best Director for that movie. But The Departed, a remake of Infernal Affairs. And again, it's him in his own little way trying to still harken back a little bit to his mafia type movies.
It was. It feels very much like a greatest hits film. Now, I think, like, you kind of hit the nail on the head. It was a lifetime achievement award, as opposed to, like, the other films on his list, like the likes of Casino, Goodfellas, Taxi Driver. I think he deserved the direction, the best director, I could say, more for those films than this one. It did feel like a kind of, they're giving it to him just, you know, because he hasn't got one. Like you said, he's been nominated 8 times, which is more than any other person in history. I think Billy Wilder was nominated as well, the same amount, but he'd actually got to win. But this one is a remake of the Japanese film Infernal Affairs. I think he's just, again, it's a really fun film. He's got the greatest hits of all the gangster stuff, and for me, probably the greatest thing he pulls off in this, he actually gets a performance out of Mark Wahlberg, which is something I don't think anyone else has been able to do. You know, if you're able to make Mark Wahlberg interesting in a film, like, Mark Wahlberg's actually nominated for an Oscar as well. If you can do that, you know, you deserve, you know, more than one Oscar from 8 nominations.
Well said, Andy, well said.
You will not ever know the identity of undercover people. Unfortunately, this shithole has more f***ing leaks than the Iraqi Navy.
F*** yourself.
Oh, I'm tired from f***ing your wife.
How's your mother?
Good, she's tired from father.
And at number one, Andy, reveal, what is your numero uno Martin Scorsese film?
For me, it's Goodfellas. It's something that I watched probably way too young when I got a VHS copy of it from somebody who probably shouldn't have given it to me. And again, it's that like we were talking about Wolf of Wall Street, just that lifestyle we are looking at it and just think, I would absolutely love that. You know, the kind of the reality sets in at the end when they all start going to jail and being murdered. But when you're watching, you're just thinking, like, that just looks so exciting. It's such an enticing lifestyle. Like, everything from the money, even the food, you know, there's the famous line, you know, you cut the garlic so thin it would liquefy in the pan, and your mouth is watering watching them cook a meal in prison. And it's just full of, you know, the Ray Liotta's amazing performance. It's a great story. And then you've got things like the Steadicam shot going from going through the back of the Copacabana all the way up to the front of the stage, which is something they actually hadn't planned. Originally in the script, they go in through the front. But when they got there, they were told, you know, the club's too busy. You can't go through the front. We're not shutting down the, you'll have to think of something else. So kind of born out of necessity, they had to, you know, well, can we go through the back way through the kitchen? And he's like, yeah, well, you need to do this, you know, in a matter of minutes, because obviously it's a working kitchen. So that's why it had to be done in one take. He didn't actually have the time to stop and do different setups. So this kind of iconic shot that people, you know, study in universities, like the one he taught at, was just born out of, you know, oh crap, we have to think on our feet here and do something quickly, otherwise we're going to lose this moment in the film.
Oh, what a craftsman he is, and it's great to see him being decorated over here in Ireland. Thank you so much, Andy, for taking a look back at his career to date and putting you on the spot there to try and narrow down your top five.
Yeah, I've changed it already.
Andy McCarroll, we'll talk to you a little later on.
Cheers, thanks Gordon.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
That's it for part one of We Love Movies, but coming up in part two, we'll be hearing from Hugh Jackman. Logan is out in cinemas next weekend, and he talks to us about his last stand as Wolverine. Plus, we'll be taking a look at this weekend's brand new cinema releases, one of which is Patriots Day, starring Mark Wahlberg. That's all to come very shortly here on We Love Movies.